Senate Resources, will come to order. We have attendance, Senator Zuroff, Senator Pierce, Senator Lehman, Senator Frank, and Senator Miller. Just so everyone will know what we're going to do today, we, first item of business will take up House Joint Resolution 49. And we'll deal with that, and then we will go and take testimony on Senate Bill 215, which is the hazard which is 470 fund bill. There was a number of people that have not yet been able to testify on it, especially from the Anchorage area. We will take those folks first, and then I have a list of some other sites online, so I will take the testimony on that to put it on public record. So with that, first, Jeff? State your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Jeff Logan. I'm the Legislative Assistant for the House Oil and Gas Committee. Apologize for the chairman responding to the legislation, has a meeting conflict, and asked me to come before you and state that in August of 1993, the Minerals Management Service of the U.S. Department of the Interior initiated the process of implementing the Financial Responsibility Section of the Oil Pollution Act of 1990. In the process of drafting these regulations to implement OPA 90, the NMS has interpreted three terms: navigable waters, offshore facility, and responsible party, in a very broad manner. In fact, Mr. Chairman, Tom Fry, the director of the MMS, has stated that these definitions seem to create a financial responsibility requirement for any activity that can spill oil and is located in, on, or under most of the surface waters of the U.S., including adjacent wetlands. The financial responsibility requirements apply both to commercial and private operations and make no allowance for quantity. These regulations could apply to marinas, port facilities, utility companies, gasoline filling stations, trucking companies, logging operations, railroads, refineries, airports. And I've got more, but I won't continue with the list. CS HDR 49 requests the MMS to reinterpret and narrow their definitions. Further, due to the problems caused by this and other sections of OPA 90, the resolution asks the MMS to propose amendments to Congress to address these problems. Alaskans from Ketchikan to Kotzebue have written to support these redefinitions, and I would note support in your packet, either on the resolution or on action from MMS, from local governments, utilities, state governmental agencies and departments, native corporations, statewide development organizations, and others. Mr. Chairman, the important thing about this resolution at this point is that the MMS has scheduled a hearing on the regulations for February 16th, next Wednesday, in Anchorage. And we are hopeful that HDR 49 can pass the Senate in a timely manner so that it can be included as part of the official public record at those hearings as a strong statement from the legislature. Further, Mr. Chairman, I would like to add that a similar resolution today passed this body. While this resolution asks the MMS for specific action, SJR 40, which the sponsor also supports, asks Congress for specific action. So they are different, and the sponsor believes they complement each other. I would hope the committee would act on the merits of this resolution today so that we can get it passed the Senate and have it available for the public record at the meeting in Anchorage. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Amen. Thank you, Jeff. Next is me, Treadwell.
Chairman, my name is Meade Treadwell. I'm Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Environmental Conservation. Glenn Gray and Mike Conway are also here, Glenn of the Division of Governmental Coordination and Mike of DEC staff. I just would like to say the administration supports this resolution and also feels that it's complimentary with the one passed by the Senate today. We're happy to answer any questions. We do believe that the provision in OPA 90 that allows state financial responsibility regulations the state to enforce federal financial responsibility regulations is one that we would look at, but we would have no desire to take over that program if the feds continue to look at this the way they're looking at it right now.
Further discussion? Thank you, Nate. Any further discussion? I'm ready.
I move that we pass House Joint Resolution 49
subcommittee with individual recommendations. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Also, I would pass a note here from Representative Bill Williams on 3 o'clock on Tuesday, February 15th, in room 124 of the Capitol Building here. The representatives of the Mineral Management Service plans to do a brief presentation on Open 90 and the status of the regulatory process, which will be followed by a roundtable discussion between legislators and MMS. And Representative Williams is extending an information invite to the members of the Senate Resources Committee and any other interested members of the House or Senate to attend this meeting.
I could just add, I understand that MMS, the reason it's a roundtable discussion is that MMS has to bring a retinue of secretaries to, if they are going to have an official hearing, they would have to have people to do the things that are taking that we do and so on and so forth. And so while they are coming to dinner, at the request of the state, to meet with people and find out what's going to come by the time official meeting is. The two resolutions the staff will be presenting to the MMS as part of the official hearing that they are holding in April 2018.
Thank you, Senator. The next item we'll take up will be public testimony on 215. It would be my attempt to just take public testimony at this particular time. I'm not sure how long this will go. I know we have a number of people to testify. Yes, we have about, looks like about 15 people lined up to testify. So I think the first person, although I mentioned that we will go to Anchorage first, I will change that just real quickly because I noticed that we have one person in Valdez that has a time constraint limit, and there's only one person in Valdez signed up, so we will do that person, and then we will go then to Anchorage and start at the top of the list. So, Valdez? Could you state your name for the record, please?
Oh, sorry. This is Christopher Arlington.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
With that, we will go to Anchorage, and we'll start with Becky Gray. And as each person comes to the mic, would they please state their name for the record and any organization that they might work for, please?
Thank you. county solution. But the problem is also a city problem. The 50-cent split, we believe, gives clear direction as long as the city has for addressing non-catastrophic spills and will allow the fund to reach the $50 million level, perhaps slower than the original 5-cent allocation, but certainly much sooner than the current deficit accumulation factor, which will never get there. There is no incentive for state agencies to ever let the fund get to the $50 million level when there are so many areas in which the dollars can be spent, and that's just what we've seen. If the other functions are deemed appropriate by the legislature, then it seems appropriate they should also be funded by general fund money, or perhaps the rest of the settlement money could be used to support the EPP program instead of buying up more trees or land. I do have a trouble following some of the testimony that factored on this fund, containing comments such as, quote, leave it alone and see how it works, or, quote, don't cannibalize the fund, and don't water down the fund. First, the fund can't be left alone. We've seen that, and we can see that it's not working very well, other than as a pass-through account, since it has no money. Secondly, the exact intent of the 2020 is to beef up the fund, not water it down, and that is quite clear both in intent and specific language. I believe the most unbelievable statement of all is that this legislation would actually cause the fund to be dormant and collecting debt. Now, factually speaking, it's just the opposite is true. This legislation will allow the fund to accumulate and be in place when and if we need it, and it will not be collecting debt. It will be collecting interest, which should make the fund grow. It really makes me wonder if the people making these kind of statements and testimony are even talking about the 470 fund, but perhaps it sounds like a joke. And although life is not fair, good public policy should tend to be. Clearly, it's not fair public policy in anyone's wildest dreams to suggest that one industry pays for all the other industries to build the region, contaminated soil, and for the producers to pay for the consumer tax, such as the Region Underground Service Program and the Citizens Oversight Council. If that was the intent, then this should be called a permanent tax hike on the oil industry, which is what it effectively has become. Even though the oil industry already paid upwards of 94% of all taxes paid this year. RDC's executive committee had a lengthy teleconference with Dean Treadwell, Bob Poe, and Mike Conway at DEC's last month in discussing the concerns. RDC supports the DEC's work with local responses to make the 470 fund function correctly, to increase the efforts to collect from the polluters, and to allow those collections to be returned to DEC or the 470 fund. Instead of going back to the general fund, has paid for these myriad programs that EPC is looking for things to do. We support SB215 as written, and we thank you for the opportunity to comment on the support legislation which we hope to be passing the law this session. Thank you.
Thank you, Becky. Next.
Thank you, Sheriff Miller, and members of the Senate Resources Committee. For the record, my name is Jerry Kohlfeld, and I'm the president of the Alaska State Chamber of Commerce. Our organization has many concerns, and one of them that there are concerns that over the past 4 years, the money that has been appropriated to the 470 fund has been appropriated for purposes other than intended in the original legislation. We believe that it is important to have a large bill reserve from the Department of Environmental Conservation and CEO, even if the responsible party is unknown or unwilling to take responsibility. However, the AACC recognizes very clearly that the 470 fund was never intended to fund other projects within the DEC operating budget under the oil spill cleanup. Furthermore, it is not fair public policy to suggest that one industry should pay for other industries' bills. The perception that the 470 fund was confused is in sense that there is no incentive for the state agency to ever get the $50 million level for which it was originally intended when there were so many other areas in which the dollars could be spent. It is our recommendation that the 470 fund be kept and the dollars be used for the purpose that it was intended for. The Alaska State Chamber of Commerce supports SB215 as written. Thank you for your opportunity to comment on this important legislation.
Thank you. Next person.
Good afternoon, Chairman Miller, and members of the Senate Resource Committee. My name is Norma Calvert, and I'm employed by Marathon Oil Company here in Anchorage. I appreciate the opportunity to share Marathon's position on Senate Bill 215. Marathon Oil supports the position that has been developed by members of the Alaska Oil and Gas Association, which you will hear in more detail later. The AOGA position details the problems and solutions to the 470 fund, therefore, I will keep my comments. We believe Senate Bill 216 will reestablish focus on the original intent of the 470 fund, which was the establishment of a $50 million fund for emergency spill response and preparedness. Uses of the 470 fund over the last 4 years for projects unrelated to oil spill emergencies has resulted in a fund balance significantly below the $50 million goal, although well over $100 million has been paid into the fund by the Alaska Oil Producers. The wide disparity of taxes paid in and the account balance is very disturbing. We appreciate the efforts made by the legislature last year to limit the appropriations from the fund and direct attention to its original purpose, but a more defined, permanent solution is needed, and Senate Bill 215 addresses the need. The solution introduced in Senate Bill 215 will split the nickel per barrel tax into two accounts and ensure that the emergency fund is $50 million is reached. The two accounts are as follows: an emergency spill response account funded by a 3 cents per barrel tax, which would be suspended when the $50 million balance is reached, and the second, a preparedness account funded with an ongoing 2 cents per barrel tax. The ongoing 2 cents per barrel tax will provide funds to the Department of Environmental Conservation for funding a preparedness program. It is Marathon's position that the current balance of the oil spill emergency fund should be assigned to the emergency spill response account. The tax proposal outlined in Senate Bill 215 not only provides a defined tax structure for our industry, but it also provides security to the DEC and to the citizens of Alaska that a $50 million fund will be in place to be utilized in the case of an emergency spill. In addition, the bill provides ongoing funding to ensure sufficient preparedness. In summary, Marathon Oil believes Senate Bill 215 provides the mechanism to achieve the goals and visions in 1989 when the 470 fund for emergency response was established and the nickel per barrel tax was closed.
Thank you. Next person.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Patty Jennifer. I'm just fine on behalf of Sam Stanley, the Executive Director of the Prince William Sound Regional Citizens Advisory Council, or RCAC. The Prince William Sound RCAC is an independent, nonprofit organization set up after the Exxon Valdez oil spill for environmentally safe operation of gas terminals and tanks to transport North Coast crude. The RCAC is certified under the Federal Oil Pollution Act and one of the two programs in Alaska for citizen oversight of the oil terminals and tanker operations. RCAC is funded exclusively through a contract with Alaska Pipeline Service Company to monitor and advise Alaska and the public on oil spill prevention and response, terminal operations, environmental impact, poor operations, and vessel traffic issues. Prince William Sound RCAC currently has 17 member organizations consisting of boroughs, towns, and villages affected by the major oil spill, a regional native corporation, and groups representing fishing, agriculture, tourism, and recreation interests in the storm affected region. FC215 is not needed. Contrary to our concern, the 470 fund is not needed. There is money set aside right there to change the federal budget for responding to a major spill. Given that the spill reserve is expected to reach $50 million in FY95 without FC215, we will be paying for the game fund. If we have much to lose, because the public exposure to oil and hazardous spill impacts will increase dramatically. FC215 is needed and it won't work. FC215 is alarmingly useful to experiences of spills defined as less than catastrophic. Even the largest spill, those of 100,000 barrels or 4.2 million gallons, cause health, environmental, and economic threats. You said portions of the spill are insufficient to fund the state's core spill prevention and response program, let alone provide spill reserve. Let alone provide spill reserve for the so-called smaller spills. Alaska was returned the days before the Exxon Valdez. Even if the catastrophic spill was about to reserve, the reserve would be hard to touch. is only used for emergency first response. The Carousel Oil Field Reserve is redundant. People seem to have forgotten that Carousel Oil Field Reserve established a $1 billion fund. While a few people seem to be afraid about redundant reserves for fuel sales, the venture programs is underfunded with no reserves set aside for the more common spills of less than $100,000. FP Cooper's team staff to make the fundamental objective of what's funding for homes, making sure we have money to respond in a timely manner. The original purpose of HP 470 is to provide for the cleanup of contaminated hazardous substance spills. That purpose was not altered by the Nickel Prevail Conservation Surcharge. By eliminating major functions of DEC and use of the response plan, this bill will cripple DEC's ability to prevent and respond to spills. In conclusion, I'd like to summarize RPA's position on that issue with you. RPA strongly opposes it. We oppose dividing the funds to return. We oppose splitting the Nickel Surcharge. We oppose creating a separate litigation account for each of the accounts. We oppose limiting access to response funds only to spills that are threatened to be over $100,000 or more. We oppose an inefficient and needlessly cumbersome the requirements that the government declare a disaster declaration before the response funds can be used for so-called smaller spills. That would increase the likelihood of spoil contribution. We oppose the two-step surcharge. It is simply inadequate to take the skill prevention, response, training, and preparedness program. We oppose giving the Commissioner of DEC sole discretion to provide the state and regional action contingency program. Given the two-step surcharge, it would be inadequate funding to ensure that we are engaged. The division is proposed to use uniformly every 2 years. We oppose eliminating the restoration and research and development and teachers for the fund. And we oppose weakening the authority of EDC and the Department of Law for technical changes to government regulations. The RPA may support the review of the methods of calculating the $50 million cap, and any changes would constitute a compromise, requiring an unacceptable session with the New York City Council. As a participant in the FP 215 working group, the RPA is working with the participants to represent the concerns of our member organizations. We also want to stress that RPA's position is modest and similar to that of the Nickel administration and voiced by the Department of Law and Environmental Conservation. We merely support the continued responsible safeguarding of the national public, the health and safety, and that of the environment. Thank you.
Thank you. Next person.
Thank you very much for this opportunity to speak to the committee. My name is Tom Walker from the LA City OSH. I am a resident of Alaska, presently reside in the Anchorage area, and I would like to voice my opposition to SB 215 as a imposition upon the Department of Law and the Department of Environmental Conservation and their efforts to prevent more so than to respond to spills, because prevention, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, and if these amendments are added to the 270 fund presently envisioned, it would create a situation where a large portion of the fund would be tied specifically to wait for a large catastrophic spill hitting the beach, whereas there is need for considerable expenditure and prevention due to the fact that the recalcitrant oil industry is refusing to purchase the proper equipment to safeguard us against oil spills of any type. As we have seen, the industry has instituted the use of tractor tugs in virtually all other areas where there is any amount of very large crude carrier traffic. We've seen them purchase tractor tugs for Puget Sound and for San Francisco Bay as well as Palmbo, England. And because of this, it may be necessary for the state to purchase these vessels to protect the public health and safety. Therefore, any restriction upon these funds for the sole response once an accident is happened would leave Alaskans vulnerable to a recalcitrant industry which does not wish to engage the proper equipment, much less allow the study of first step in finding the necessary equipment and then purchasing it for the protection of the health and safety of Alaska. This is a demonstrative attempt of the industry to prevent the public from protecting themselves, and such tying up of funds would be definitely not in the public or constitutional interest of the residents of Alaska. I sincerely hope that the committee will take the advice of DEC and Department of Law and the Citizens Regional Advisory Committee, which are in concert attempting to maintain a sufficient prevention and response fund, and that the Senate Bill 215 not be passed as committee and rejected as written. Thank you very much.
Mr. Lakosh, we have a question from Senator Pierce.
Yes,
Mr. Lakosh, I thought that the RCAC did a study on tractor tugs and it was inconclusive. Have they finalized part two of that study?
No, the second part of the study has not been concluded, but they are assessing the need for what appears to be at least two tractor tugs and a salvage tug to respond to the open water oil spills. All of these vessels might be required for the LES for the lead terminal lease renewal, as well as under the Coast Guard Open 90 regulations for open sea response. I might also add that the Department of Emergency Services has dropped the ball on creating a response depot and a volunteer response corps, which was fully funded but not used, and now has reverted to, I believe, the fund, which must be reallocated for those specific uses of establishment of a response corps and a volunteer response corps, a paid volunteer response corps, and response depots where they might be able to obtain equipment to respond not only to oil spills, but hazardous substances as well.
Mr. Lakosh, if the study isn't complete and the first portion was inconclusive, isn't it a bit unfair to call anyone recalcitrant and refusing to purchase equipment that has not yet been shown to be necessary?
There have been many studies that have showed that traffic tugs are required for this type of traffic. If they're required for Alaska North Coast Cruise, where the region Washington waters and Puget Sound, I don't see why it wouldn't be as appropriate to be used in Prince William Sound unless the industry has determined that they can get away with polluting Alaska waters easier than they can polluting Washington waters.
Mr. Lakosh, do you have a Coast Guard license to handle large ships?
No more than you can, Senator.
I know I don't. I've also had the people who handle the ships tell me the difference is what sort of waters you're dealing with, from Strait of Juan de Fuca into Washington waters and California waters, and I have been in Solombo, and I know what sort of I know that they have tractor tugs. Those same tractor tugs refuse to go out after the Bray incident because they cannot handle the high seas. And you do have to look at Prince William Sound conditions around Hinchinbrook Island and the outer edges of the sound, some of the toughest sea conditions in the world, and I think that it's very unfair to say that, well, just because they have them out everywhere, we ought to have them here until we actually know whether they would work under those sea conditions. That's all I'm saying.
Senator, you may have listened closely to my testimony. I also suggested that a salvage tug would be necessary as well, a 30,000 horsepower, 400 foot long vessel that is the only vessel capable of responding in open waters. I was suggesting the use of tractor tugs for inland waters where they have been best demonstrated to be the most effective vessel for prevention of a loss of steering, loss of power accident, and has been established in Puget Sound, San Francisco Bay, and Solombo.
You want to follow up? Okay, thank you for your testimony, Ken Freeman.
Proper condition of COVID and cleanup, especially with a high level legislation or fines to closure in March funding. Funds should be appropriated for other sources. The point of having the board levy fund is to ensure that the necessary infrastructure is in place and provide money for additional services in case of a bill. It is not our policy to utilize that money for other purposes. The 2-cent, 3-cent split may not allow the funds to reach the $50 million mark as quickly as the original budget allocation. But it certainly reached the mark sooner than the funds are taken out for other purposes. Alaska never has to face an emergency with an unresponsible part. We need to have all necessary funds in reserve so the state can respond. We do not want to be caught at the beginning of the bill without the necessary funding to respond immediately at full capacity. Compared to the support funding fund, really the $50 million mark, to ensure that the state of Alaska can provide adequate catastrophic bill protection. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Freeman. Judy Brady?
Required
report to the Commissioner Revenue for the difference between Section A1 and the amount of A2. If the Commission Administration reports the difference determined by this section, people who receive $50 million, Commission of Revenue shall determine the difference, correct the surcharge levy and collection. For our knowledge, despite the statutory requirement that this be reported every quarter, this formal report will be issued for the first time on April 6th, 2023. The issuance of this first report was very concerning. The report showed that the 470 fund actually carried a negative balance of $12 million. This effectively meant that the industry would have to pay an additional $2 million and the prevailing tax from the $50 million cap originally intended for the fund to be used. The second accounting problem relates to the money accumulated in the emergency still computer. The question is whether this money can actually account for the $6 million cap on the fund. In order to maintain an emergency still reserve, each year a cross-section of the operating budget, the legislature will appropriate the funds for the emergency still reserve fund. The problem created by the separate voting appropriation is whether this money can be expended for the 470 fund. If this appropriation is an expenditure, then it does not count for the $6 million cap on the fund. This issue was first raised by the legislative research agency when they reported last year the 470 fund balance was only $100 million. The agency has taken a different theory that this money has not been expended. In this case, the statute is being declared the same. Given all the confusion on what the balance of the 470 fund is, whether appropriations to still reserve are considered to be expenditures, different views over what the appropriate use of the money of the 470 fund are. They also believe it is necessary to not have a new approach to the fund. For this reason, they owe the strongest support to the proposal of SB 1015 and SB 1038 to put the current angle into two accounts. A new attempt to prepare our oil field dependence account funding to a permanent attempt to prepare the account and a pretext to prepare a central oil discharge account. We believe this proposal is a win-win opportunity for all interested parties for several reasons. First, it will provide for the $50 million cash emergency fund originally envisioned in 1989. Funding will be by other environmentally related expenditures. This proposal would ensure there is an accepted and secure independent source of $50 million available to the state and local communities to seek an emergency. Provide additional money for the catastrophic oil discharge reserve account. We also believe that it is essential to balance the current oil spill emergency reserve fund to be transferred to a new account. Second, permanent attempts to barrel cap to go to an oil spill preparedness account, ensuring a permanent and secure source of funds. The $0.02 per barrel cap would provide over $10 million per year, more than the $5 to $8 million originally projected. While this is somewhat less than currently the intent of the exposure to the 470 fund, we should also be noted that agencies have indicated that long-term operating costs for prevention and response programs will decrease when initial startup costs have been incurred. Third, it will provide some form of tax certainty for the industry. The current state tax policy is eliminated. Industry will continue to pay 5 cents per barrel. Until the catastrophic oil discharge emergency reserve account, the agency projects a 17 cents per barrel tax paid up to that time. No more guessing means that the letter gives the temporary tax to the industry. Chairman, I have been notified that
That would be fine.
Fourth and most important, this legislation will provide certainty for Alaska citizens. The public will know if there is a $50 million fund sitting there to be an emergency and home institution. The public will also know that there is a fair and secure source of guaranteed funding available in case of emergency resurgence program. This is a major subject of legislative debate each year because the funding for the state underground storage.
Thank you. I'd also like to state, if anyone has written testimony, if they would just give it to the LIO that they're in, and they will fax it to us so we can have submitted into the committee records. So with that, let's go to Walt Parker.
Yeah.
Thank you, Walt. Next person is Mike Macy.
Good afternoon, Senator, and other committee members. My name is Mike Macy. As a former employee of the Department of Environmental Conservation, I co-authored the State of Alaska Master Plan for Oil and Hazardous Substance Spills. Today, I'm testifying on behalf of the Alaska Wayfarers, statewide organization of service and other clean water recreation. Our organization opposes the proposed bill that C215 and C238. What happened to the legislators? Commitment to prevent a return to Dead John Valley soil. Alaska Wave Riders recall with the apparent memory loss of SB215 sponsors. We haven't forgotten Dead John Valley soil spill. Like the 475, our organization was a direct outgrowth of Dead John Valley soil spill. Legislature authorized the fund because they were determined that the state of Alaska should never again be so unprepared to respond to major oil spills. Whatever happened to fiscal responsibility? While the state faces huge revenue shortfalls, even Wally Hipple has acknowledged the need to raise taxes, SB 215 sponsors apparently feel that the oil industry deserves yet another tax break. The industry may cry poverty all day long, but they still rack up tens of billions of dollars of profits year in and year out, and a significant portion of these profits come from oil which belongs to all the people of Alaska. Why is the legislature so determined to gut the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation? The legislature has already given control of catastrophic spill response to the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, an agency with little spill response experience and no interest in or responsibility for protecting Alaska's environment. This is like having a 9/11 operator mop the floor. Inevitably, someone in a life and death situation is going to get put on hold, and the floor will never get clean. Now you propose to make it more difficult for DEC to conduct spill drills, review contingency plans, inspect vessels and facilities, supply spill response equipment depots, and even, and this we find incredible, make it harder to train volunteer response force. And we thought the Republican Party was going to cut down on government by fostering volunteerism. And what's the idea behind limiting DEC's ability to clean up spills smaller than 100,000 barrels? That's like telling the fire department that they can't respond to fires unless the whole town is burned. Lessons learned responding to small spills make it possible to prevent large spills and keep catastrophic sized spills from becoming major disasters. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to recognize that spill volume is only one factor in determining spill seriousness. Legislature created the 470 Fund in the belief that paying for spill response preparedness would be part of the cost of doing oil business in Alaska. It's clear that the sponsors of this legislation either don't care about spill response or are willing to take the risk that if they open the barn door, the horse won't escape while they are in office. The Alaska Wave Riders don't believe that all of Alaska's wave riders, birds, fish, and mammals, as fishermen, boaters, visitors, and residents, should face the prospect of up to their necks in oil. Far better to see the sponsors of this legislation up to their necks in hot water. If you find this latter prospect unappealing, we humbly request that you administer the quick coup de grace that this legislation so richly deserves. Industry's contention here today that SB 215 will guarantee that there will be $50 million funds sitting there in case there is a catastrophic spill may be true, but it's unfortunately going to be true that if SB 215 becomes law, nobody will know what to do with that $50 million. Thank you.
Thank you. One question for you, Mike. Where do you go surfing at in Alaska?
Yakutat, Icy Cape, Dutch Harbor, Kodiak, Hinchinbrook Island, wherever there's unoiled water.
I just wanted to know. I haven't seen much of it on the Chena River lately, so that's fine. Thank you. Next person will go to Sue Libinson.
Yes, thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Sue Libinson. I'm testifying today as a private citizen. As many members of the committee may recall, I was director of the Alaska Center for the Environment during the oil spill and when the 470 Fund was created. I have a few comments. First of all, as a private citizen, it's very difficult to grasp how the legislature has time to consider reducing a tax that has been working, which has not been hampering the oil industry in terms of their ability to operate in the state at a time when you face such enormous budget crisis. It's hard to understand private citizens that legislature has time to consider this. Moving on to some of the specifics of the issues at risk here, there were a lot of lessons learned from the oil spill. And quite frankly, there were a lot of recommendations that came out of the Oil Spill Commission, which the legislature appointed to come up with ideas as to the best means of prevention and foreseeing problems with future spills. And quite frankly, the legislature, due to political pressure from the oil industry, failed to adopt most of the recommendations of the Oil Spill Commission. One of the few steps forward that the legislature did make during that period of, you know, all the lessons we learned from the oil spill was to defund the 470 fund. So to take, you know, to come back a mere 5 years later and take shot talks at the 470 fund just really belies belief that the little response the legislature did choose to take after that crisis, that we're willing to step backwards so quickly. I think the public has seen quite extensively what a $1 billion cleanup looks like. We know what $1 billion looks like in Prince William Sound. We know what it did and didn't accomplish. Quite frankly, we're not impressed. And we're not impressed what $50 million on hand would do. What people are much more impressed with and what we learned was prevention is the only real key. And our money is much better spent on inspection, preventive planning, contingency planning, that kind of thing, than worrying about how much money we have on hand for a response. That, I mean, and I think, quite frankly, that this whole business about having enough money in the fund at any given time is a sunscreen that's, you know, readily seen by anyone outside of, you know, just the bureaucratic maneuvering that we're watching here today. With regard to using the monies for hazardous waste cleanups and cleanups that are non-oil, you know, let's be realistic. We live in a state where we have hazardous waste problems. We're not living in a pristine paradise, and the money needs to come from somewhere. And hazardous waste cleanups have very real effects on constituents statewide, affecting property values, health, so on and so forth. And we need and as all states do, we need to have a creative solution. And here we have a solution in place that's working. It's not, you know, taxes have to come from somewhere. And like I said, I would imagine you have plenty to do this session, figuring out where to come up with funding for other problems. Here we have something that's taken care of, and yet we're ready to take it apart. You know, in the same way that we're looking at taxing tobacco and alcohol to take care of health reform, you know, we've looked to one of our larger industries, which is a contributing industry to our hazardous waste problem, has been historically places like Kenai Peninsula, and have a fund that's working, a tax that's working to fund much-needed services. So I hope, you know, I appreciate the time that the legislature is putting into looking at this, but quite frankly, I hope you'll devote time to some more important challenges. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, that's the last person I have signed up in Anchorage. So with that, I'll go to Fairbanks and Mr. Paul Headley.
Hello?
Yes, go right ahead. We can hear you.
Okay, thank you. My name is Paul Headley, and I'm representing Tanner and Chiefs Conference here in Fairbanks. And TCC thanks you for the opportunity to provide input on this bill. TCC opposes SB 215, as well as the concept of placing only two-fifths of the 470 fund monies into a relief, prevention, and response account. Two facts come to mind concerning this issue. First is that the vast majority of oil spill problems are 1,000 gallons or less, and that 470 funds provide assistance for rural villages to meet their contingency plan responsibilities. SB 215 appears to provide tax relief to oil companies while shifting the cost to Alaska communities as well as the state general fund. Protection of the environment would be taking a step backwards from the original intention of the 470 fund. TCC, we believe, in taking the initiative and being preventative as opposed to reactive when the oil is in the water.
Thank you, Paul. Next, we will go to Homer, and we have two people signed up there. The first person wants to go ahead and go, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Gail Parsons. I'm speaking on behalf of myself today. I'm an artist, a teacher, and I work in the tourism industry. I oppose SB 215. Oil and hazardous substance release response is what the 470 fund was designed to be. It's meant to be just that and not to be limited. DEC's ability to clean up spills needs to continue to be supported through this fund. We don't need to divide it up. DEC also needs funding to conduct drills and oversee contingency plans. As other people have stated quite clearly, prevention is the name of the game. The company to extract the valuable resources need to continue to be required to fund prevention, preparedness, and response, and not shift this burden to small distributors and consumers. I myself have just come from a doctor's appointment. I suffer from allergies related to pollution, and I strongly recommend that we clean up the hazardous waste sites in this state before it's like the state of New Jersey and New York, where I come from to escape the pollution. Thank you.
Thank you. Next person there, and Homer.
Can you hear me?
Yes, hear you very well.
Okay, great. My name is Michael Mara. I'm a longtime resident of the Homer area and the curator of the Pratt Museum's exhibit on the Exxon Valdez oil spill, homesteader, editorial cartoonist, local character. I've been outside for 5 weeks, so you have to excuse me. I don't have a point-by-point discussion of this bill. However, I have had a chance to review the summaries of some of the organizations who testified here tonight and some that haven't testified tonight. And I think I can make a few comments. First of all, rather than bore you with a long litany of the details, I can say that I heartily concur with the testimony presented by Sue Liebenson and Patty Ginsburg of the PWSRCAC. I support the position of that organization and the points of concern that were recently raised by the Alaska Environmental Lobby, and I'm sure you all have copies of their position papers. We in Lower Cook Inlet have been involved for the last few months with a dispute involving a proposed oil and gas lease sale here, Bell 78. One of the major reasons why there is so much concern here, why people, ordinary people, have gone to the wall over that sale, is that we have firsthand knowledge of how inadequate preparation and response capability are for Cook Inlet. And I can assure you that a lot of people here are all the more concerned because of attempts in the legislature to attack the 470 fund. I might suggest to the oil industry that when they ask us why we are so distrustful and why we can't accept them, they take a strong look at what they're proposing here and elsewhere. When the industry no longer wants to destroy the 470 fund, when the industry openly embraces real efforts at adequate prevention and response capability here, then I think the people would be more willing to accept them. Until that time, I think their efforts to subvert those suggestions that were made by the Alaska Oil Spill Commission will prove counterproductive, because in the end, I think they will promise continuing interruption and delay of the oil and gas leasing process. That's really all I have to say today. I'm going to follow this bill and I'll try to bring myself up to speed on it, maybe make some more personal observations as it moves along. I want to thank you all for your time here and for giving me the opportunity to state my position. It's good to be home.
Thank you, Mike. With that, then we will go to Cordova.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Mary McBurney. I'm Executive Director for Cordova District Fishermen United. I'll make my comments very brief. Basically, CDFG supports the position expressed by the Prince William Sound RCAC, and we also maintain our opposition to SB 215. Primarily, SB 215 does a great job, I suppose, of addressing catastrophic spills. With SB 215 and the provisions to put 3 cents of the nickel into a catastrophic account, that coupled with the provisions of OPA 90 basically ensures that we're going to have catastrophic spills covered. That's terrific. However, I keep hearing in the conversation that the 2 cents is kind of getting lost, and that's where our concerns are really directed at this point, that the 2 cents that are left over to be stuck into a release prevention and response account is not going to be enough to address the problems that need to be taken care of. More spills take place that are much less than 100,000 barrels. In fact, about 94% of all spills are less than the catastrophic oil spill that we have provided for more than adequately. And for these spills, I would hope that the committee might entertain a suggestion of beefing up the release prevention and response account, perhaps increasing that 2 cents to a nickel, and therefore ensuring that there is going to be an adequate amount of money in that prevention and response account to truly prevent and respond to these equally catastrophic, but smaller releases of hazardous substances and oils. And with that, I thank you for the time to testify this afternoon.
Thank you, Mary. With that, that was the last person I had here on the teleconference to testify.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes. Go right. Is that you, Walt?
Yes, it is.
Oh, go right ahead. Where are you at? Just state your name and where you're at.
My name is Virginia. I just signed up. I believe I may have failed to check the testimony box, but if I may testify at this point.
Go right ahead, Walt. Just state your name for the record.
For the record, Mr. Chairman, my name is Walt Furness, and I serve as General Manager of the Alaska Support Industry Alliance. I'm here on behalf of the organization in support of Senate Bill 215. While I had a different type of presentation, I think it's important, Mr. Chairman, that we somewhat revisit 1989. Many of us remember quite distinctly what happened in 1989 in that the Exxon Valdez hit a rock and spilled millions of gallons of oil in the channel. And we realized at that time that the state did not have a fund established in order to be able to respond to such a catastrophe. And after much deliberation, the legislature entered into a commitment with the industry. That commitment was this, Mr. Chairman, and you and many of your colleagues were at the table at the time this commitment was made. And while we realized that Chapter 26 was in place, and we realized that Chapter 26 did make available a funding source for environmental problems, the commitment in 1989 was to set aside a fund equal to $50 million as an emergency response kitty that could be drawn upon in case the state of Alaska experienced another situation similar to the Exxon Valdez. And so, Mr. Chairman, in coming with this commitment, we amended Chapter 26 of statute, and that amendment included language that says thus that the industry would agree to pay a tax equal to 5 cents a barrel, and that that tax would be collected until the fund reached $50 million, at which time it would be suspended. Now, that was the agreement. Now, since 1989, we know that the industry, under that agreement has paid in over $112 million. We also note that as a result of that large payment in, that fund has not achieved the $50 million balance that we all felt that was necessary in order to provide monies to respond quickly to a spill again should another vessel similar to the Exxon Valdez hit a rock in the channel. The Alliance support for Senate Bill 215 is a result of looking at the history of what took place in 1989 and the history of that commitment to the industry and the realization in that the current system is broke. It was not envisioned that this $50 million fund would continue as it has. It was not envisioned that $112 million would have been spent on other possibilities under Chapter 26. It was not envisioned that that nickel would still have been paid by the industry with no end in sight. And so when the drafters of 215 came with this proposition that let's split the nickel, we still deemed it important to accumulate $50 million in a fund that can be used to respond very rapidly to a major spill. But we'll also agree to take 2 cents of that nickel. We'll put 3 cents towards that, but we will use 2 cents towards other funding possibilities under Chapter 26. Now, we believe that's a fair deal, Mr. Chairman. Now, while we realize that through the general fund, the legislature had funded in the past, prior to 1989, the other needs of Chapter 26. Personally, we think that that is the way it should still be, that the general fund expenditure should be dedicated towards those other needs. But because of revenue shortfalls in the state, we support splitting the nickel, 3 cents towards accumulation of the $50 million bill contingency fund, and the 2 cents to handle other needs of preparedness throughout the state of Alaska. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I think when you review this, it makes a lot of sense to do that at this time. But the ultimate goal of the 470 fund is to accumulate the $50 million. I was at the table with many of you when we voted on this, and I'm sure you would concur with my comments that that was the ultimate goal. It was not envisioned under any circumstance that this fund would have been spent in large amounts, as it has been, to meet so many other needs. So, Mr. Chairman, I'll close by saying here, we think it's important, we being the Alaska Support Industry Alliance, we think it's important that you move with all speed in the passage of Senate Bill 215, and that the ultimate health of this state in terms of its ability to respond depends upon having a set amount of monies, and again, that has been set at $50 million. We believe that that is an important commitment to continue. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I will close my remarks and respond to any questions.
Thank you, Walt. I don't see any questions here. So with that, I think we have gone around this whole circle and got everybody in that wanted to testify.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
One more on Anchorson, please.
Oh, go right ahead. If they would state their name for the record, please.
Jim Robertson, and I live in Soldovia, Alaska. I own and operate Harmony Point Wilderness Lodge. It's a tourism business, and my business depends on clean coastal waters in order to be successful. I'm here today to testify in opposition to Senate Bill 215. I recollect that when the 470 fund was originally passed, it was passed to deal with contaminated sites. It was
later amended to deal with catastrophic oil spills. But from my point of view, the pool of oil under the ground originally was the property of the people of the state of Alaska. And it, from that pool of oil, the cost of producing the oil and transporting it to market must be paid. And from my point of view, the cost of dealing with the regulations and the damage to the environment caused by that pool of oil should also be paid by the pool of oil. And the closer you can take that cost, the wellhead, the better off you are. I am in favor of continuing to use the nickel barrel tax to pay for, first of all, and most importantly, prevention. Secondly, adequate monitoring and regulations of the oil production and transportation industry. And thirdly, to establish a reserve to respond to the needs of spills and contaminated sites. Appreciate the opportunity to speak. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, with that, I think we probably have gotten everybody. It is now approaching 5 o'clock. The next work session will be this coming Friday, which will be listen-only teleconference to the sites around the state. We will have one Senate bill, I believe it's Senate Bill 202 up first, the sale of water by municipalities. That will be the first item on Friday before the work session, and then we will go straight into the work session. Senator Pierce.
Now, just for the record, I sat here and went through the session laws from just 89 and 90 alone, and in those 2 years alone, the legislature passed at least four separate pieces of legislation that I could find that dealt with taking money out of the 470 fund for multiple purposes. We were busy.
Thank you, Senator Pierce. So with that, Senate Resources is adjourned. And now that we can't get iced tea money for the ferry, does that mean we're 470 money?
Your subject with me.
Oh,
that was just in those 2 years.
Oh, I know. Yeah, we got a. Sure.